Okay, Mercedes.
Hello.
Are you guys getting any new bunnies?
Oh, I wish. We need to lay low on our bunnies. They keep dying on us. We're down to one. We're going to stick with chickens. They're hardier. Oh, and we have never lost one. So we're going to stick with chickens. And we do have a bunny, my sweet Grace. She's holding on. I just love them so much. And then Juno, we just are celebrating her 14th birthday.
I cannot believe Juno is 14.
I know.
Birthday will you guys party get another dog? Every...
You know, we'll take a minute. We'll take a minute because we want to.
Yeah.
I really want to consider more of a, what's it called? A canine companion mm-hmm. dog for Sunflower. Yeah. So I feel like too, we want to take a break just because with our chickens, it's really easy to leave them and have like a neighbor check in on them. But with Juno, we don't really have a consistent person that could like watch over mm-hmm. her. And then we don't really want to spend the buco bucks. So we are going to, after she passed, take a little break mm-hmm. and do some bigger trips to the East Coast for a longer time, stay with Andy's family, just do things that we weren't really able to do so easily, mm-hmm. then consider doing the process for a canine companion for Sunflower.
That's so good. We have not done an episode on canine companions and therapy dogs. How is that possible?
Oh my gosh. How is that possible?
We're talking about this. Listeners, would you like an episode on that? I do.
I think I heard them say yes.
Everyone said yes. Everyone raised their hand. Thank you, listeners. We got a second dog, and we just started like obedience training, but at a facility that has the option to like step up all the way through therapy dog training.
Amazing.
So it's like you start with a puppy obedience training, then they have to get like, I think there's like 10 obedience things. There's got to be a better way to say that to get – they have to pass, like, check this checklist of these 10.
Yes.
Skills. There we go. Skills. And then they can – and it's, like, AKC certified and blah, blah, blah. And then you can try to do therapy. So we want to work on that for Macy.
I love that.
Because God bless her, Mason could use a companion dog.
Yeah, right. I love it.
Give her a little playful nudge from time to time. Chill out, sister. That's what she means.
And I feel like Sunny wants to assert that authority. So I'm like hoping it goes from me to like asserting a loving authority over a canine companion.
Trying to be the pack leader in your family. And you're like,
no, yes. How about of this sweet dog? Okay. That's you. So I know we think about that. That's why we're having a birthday party for Juno, and someone gave us the advice, and it's kind of, you guys could look it up. I'm forgetting the name, but it's called like, it's not a celebration of life, but it's called something specific where you do that with your pet before they pass, when you know they're mm-hmm. going to probably pass. So you celebrate them, you include the kids, and we're going to do like family portraits and everything like that. So
I love this.
Juno. And she might not die for like a little bit longer, but 14 is really old for a boxer. She's still kicking it, but I can't even talk about it. She just sleeps longer. She just has lost some bowel movements. So it's just a thing. So we got to celebrate her.
Yes. Celebrate her. I love that you guys are doing that. That is so precious. And I feel like this is a little bit on topic, sort of. From a side door, because we're talking about this planning for the future, right?
Yes.
We can connect it. We can connect the dots
with our loving, I know, our family members and all that different special and unique ways that means. So yes, we can connect that.
Yeah. So on that note, let's shout some worth and shift some narratives for people with Down syndrome. We are excited to have Philip Clark joining us again today. He is the founder and president of Enable Special Needs Planning, and he's here today to have an important conversation about how and when to involve siblings in guardianship and decision-making process. And we're so glad to have him here for this conversation. It is an honor to shout worth for people with Down syndrome and a journey that we continually find ourselves listening and learning, mm-hmm. definitely. And this is a conversation you don't want to miss. So welcome, friends, to the Lucky Few podcast. Mm-hmm.
Hey everybody, Micah here. I'm so thrilled to let you know that my second book, Blessed Are the Rest of Us, How Limits and Longing Make Us Whole, is coming into the world. This book is a memoir about my life with my little guy, Ace, who is autistic and who has Down syndrome. And it's an exploration of the way loving someone with a disability has transformed my understanding of what it means to be whole. I hope you'll pre-order Blessed Are the Rest of Us and get 40% off when you follow the link in our show notes to Baker Bookhouse. And look for it April 9th, everywhere books are sold.
All right, podcast listeners and friends, we're here today with Philip Clark. Philip Clark is the founder of Enable Special Needs Planning, helps families across the country plan for abundant futures. His younger sister, Sarah, has Down syndrome and is the catalyst for his unique approach to planning. He believes that planning should enable our loved ones to live happy, fulfilling, and purposeful lives today and in the future. Early in his career, he realized the industry's approach to special needs planning only prepared parents for when they could no longer care for their children. While having a plan for life's what-ifs is vital, as a proud big brother, he knew families needed better conversations about future planning centered around creating opportunities for success today. Phil is a chartered special needs consultant. He enjoys volunteering with the special needs ministry at his church, Down Syndrome Indiana, and Gigi's Playhouse, Indianapolis, and recently served as a founding board member for Same As You. And we're so glad to have him here for this conversation. So let's get right to it, friends. So Philip, welcome back to the Lucky Few podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back again with you guys.
So great. We're big fans, listeners of Enable S&P and Philip Clark and his family. He actually was on episode 47 and episode 191. So he's a three timer.
Yay.
That's excited. Yeah.
A small great. List of three timers. So we should start like a
I'm honored.
Club or send a pin or something.
I love that. Right? Send a pin. Well, for our listeners, Phil, would you briefly share your story and your personal journey on how you came to this niche special needs planning in the financial service industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So Heather said it very well, but it came back to seeing what planning looked like for my parents and how overwhelming and frustrating and confusing it was. And so even at a younger age, I saw just a fear around planning for Sarah's future. And that was really the catalyst of why I got into the industry, just thinking planning shouldn't be this difficult for our loved ones. And so that was how I jumped in. That's how I made the decision that I wanted to make the process better for my family, but also for other families.
All right, Philip, I'm excited to have this conversation really from the sibling perspective. And I'm wondering how far back you would need to go to share with us like this, where you saw kind of this piece that was missing in terms of like the industry standard approach to special needs planning compared to your family's experience and then what launched you into this business. Like when did you start to see this need and this gap from your perspective as Sarah's brother?
I think it really started when we were having the conversations as a family. And as a proud big brother, I remember being curious about what the planning conversations were and why we were having them. And then that realization of Sarah might need additional support for the rest of her life. And me being that proud big brother stepping in saying, don't worry, if something ever happened, I would be there for Sarah. And I can remember my parents saying, sweetie, this should not fall on your shoulders. And I said, no, I want to. So those were the early conversations that we had as a family that got me into thinking about what the future looked like and seeing some gaps. But it really became obvious about the holes in the industry standard to special needs planning, in my opinion, when I got my first job out of college at a firm that did special needs planning. And there was two different problems that I saw with their approach. One, it was a cookie cutter approach. It was the same solution, same strategies, same conversations with every single family that came through our doors. And we all know that each of our loved ones are amazingly unique in the abilities that they have, and the planning solutions should look different for every single family. And family dynamics are different. And that just wasn't the case. But the biggest problem that I saw was that special needs planning was only focused on what happens when my parents pass away. And yeah, we got to have that conversation because nobody's given tomorrow. But again, it comes back to my proud big brother perspective. And I looked at that and I said, no, planning has to be centered on Sarah and our loved ones and allowing them to live that happy and fulfilling and purposeful life. And that's always going to change. And the plan should evolve as that changes. And so it really does go back to my proud big brother perspective on what I believe Sarah is capable of and what I believe all of our loved ones are capable of and how they can impact the world. And the planning conversations just didn't touch on that at all.
Phil, I kind of going off of that then, how important is it to involve siblings in the guardianship conversation and decision-making process? And what do you think, like, timeline-wise, like, do you kind of plant the seed as they're younger and kind of go from there? What would be your tips and what have you seen with your clients?
Every family is going to be different, right? But when we talk about planning for the future, I always encourage families to get the siblings involved as soon as possible. And if not getting them involved, but just be observant on some of the curiosity that they see in them, because there's probably a lot of questions that they are struggling with and asking themselves that they might not be comfortable yet to verbalize, right? So just look for times when a sibling seems curious or seems like they want to be involved in this, and then go at their own pace. My parents didn't push anything on us. They didn't make us sit down and have these conversations, but it evolved as I became more and more curious.
How old were you when you sat down and had, and like, can you remember how old you were?
I can't remember the exact age. I was probably, if I'm guessing, 11, 12 years old. When I realized that these planning conversations were very important. And that's why I started identifying all the emotions and all the fear around planning. And that's when I started questioning, like, why is it so hard? We're talking about something that should be amazing, Sarah's future. And it's anything but exciting. It's fearful.
And for our listeners, can you tell your family dynamic? It's you, Sarah. Do you have other siblings? And you have your mom and dad.
Yeah. So I'm the oldest. Sarah's 4 years younger than I am. And then we have a sister. Her name's Grace. And she is 4 years younger than Sarah.
Okay. And you can't speak for Grace because you're not Grace. But can you speak on where Grace stands in the planning as well?
So Grace was always involved, just like I was. As she got older, she was more and more curious. Her career has stemmed from her passion for just seeing Sarah thrive in what she's doing. And she's now in a counseling position where she's counseling individuals with special needs, but also a lot of siblings and family members, just because she saw a lot of the dynamics that I saw, saw that conversations need to be better. But Grace and I together have a lot of one-off conversations about what Sarah's future could be like. So it's not just family conversations with my mom and dad and Sarah and Grace and I, but a lot of times Grace and I are having these conversations about, you know, how do we enhance the plan? How do we encourage Sarah to take opportunities and take risks, right? So I think that's unique from a sibling's perspective, is we want to push Sarah, where sometimes my parents approach planning from a, let's protect Sarah first and then push her. Grace and I sometimes are the complete opposite, which it's good balance, right?
So can you provide examples of successful strategies for engaging siblings in the planning process?
I think it's just that open conversation, not being fearful to get them involved too early. A lot of the conversations I have with families when they're entering into this topic of when do we get the other kids involved, I think there's a fear on, I think it's too soon, right? That idea around that. But again, I go back to, if you're having these questions, I think your kids are also having these questions. If you're wondering whether it's time to get them involved, I think you're there because you're probably witnessing something that's telling you that. And so, and it doesn't have to be an involved or a deep conversation on the what ifs in life. But if we can start the conversation with, this is what a great future could look like for your brother or your sister. What do you think about that? Or what do you see that they could do in the future that would allow them to have a great life. Like, help them become curious and involved in that, in those discussions.
I like what you mentioned, that it is kind of a fear, but then also like a worry, because I know for myself, like that tension of, I don't want my kids to feel pressure, which you brought up earlier, like your parents never pressured you. Like, I want them to want on their own to take care of each other, you know, especially Sunflower, especially their sister. And what were some ways that your parents fostered that, you know, not pressured you, but like ways that they helped foster that desire for you and your sister Grace in her profession, but to want to be actively involved in your sister's life, you know, and not feel it like as a pressure, but as a proud big brother?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a question that I've thought through a lot, because there's a lot in the sibling community of feeling resentment, right? And that's something that I never felt. And I've often wondered, so what was different about our experience that allowed me to be that proud big brother and not be resentful for Sarah? Because as proud of her as I am, and as amazing as she is, and as much of the glue she is to our family, growing up, there was a lot of frustrating times, right? It wasn't easy. It was often frustrating. And my parents allowed me to have the space to voice those frustrations. There was a lot of therapies we went to that I didn't want to go to. There was a lot of things that were focused on Sarah where, looking back, I probably felt like I was being left out, or I was being the overseen, right? And so, but I never felt like I couldn't talk to my parents about that. And they always acknowledged my feelings, saying, you're right. Mm-hmm. It's not fair. This is why we're doing this. Yeah. And I think just acknowledging those emotions that I was feeling allowed me to look past that and focus on her.
I get a lot of people who have been following our journey, like, really concerned for Truly, our middle daughter, who doesn't have a Down syndrome, and her older and younger siblings do. And that's kind. And I think I always am like, do you want to know who thinks about this the most in the world? Me. I think about this the most, like you. Thank you for your concern. But there also is an aspect too that I think with people don't think through, is this is Truly's norm. She doesn't have another scenario that she's lived in, and then all of a sudden she's plucked out of that and she's a sibling to two kids with disabilities. You know, like, do you feel that with you and your younger sister? Like, this is what it is. It's not weird or different to you. This is your life.
Yeah. I was 4 when she was born, so this was my life. And exactly like you said, there was nothing that I can compare it to. So I can look back at frustrations and realize, but I would have frustrations even if Sarah didn't have Down syndrome, right? It's a sibling dynamic. It's not because she had Down syndrome, but it's because life isn't fair, right? And so, yeah, I don't have an alternative perspective to look at, but I can focus on what I know.
I think we get a lot of parents, new parents with a diagnosis, and one of the biggest fears is siblings, right? Like, whether it's their first child or they already have a child with Down syndrome, they're so afraid and concerned about this unknown of, like, how is this going to affect my kids? And I'm wondering if you are able to share it all from, you could share personally if you want, but also from, like, the work that you do. You work with a lot of families that are in all different stages in where they're at with their child with a disability and how many siblings they have, just all the different dynamics. I'm wondering if you could speak to that fear a little bit in parents of, like, hey, I am a sibling. I interact with siblings, and maybe the fear is valid. You know, like, can you just speak a little bit more to some of, maybe tell a story or two from a clients you've worked with or people you've interacted with in the community?
Yeah, I can share from my perspective, then kind of go into other stories that I can see. And it's a real fear. My wife and I are expecting our second child in 6 weeks. And it's a fear that we have too, because it's going to change Emma's life completely, right? Mm. And any change, any shift in dynamic is going to cause a ripple effect and have a change in relationships and attitudes and all this. So I get the fear around this because it's real, but it really comes back to, what is your focus? Is your focus the open conversations and the focusing on what does abundance look like for our loved ones? And how can we make sure together as a family, we stay solid and are moving cohesively in a direction that we want to go, and make sure everybody's involved in that conversation? I go back to that so much, but I emphasize that with every single family that we serve, that we've got to have conversations. It's not like we sit down once a year and have another conversation. It's that conversation is evolving over mm-hmm. and over and over again. And it's not just focused on Sarah's life. It's how are we all impacted by the decisions that we are helping her with and mm-hmm. Pushing her towards, and how do we find joy in allowing her to have success. And that's, yeah. It's been such the catalyst of my view of planning, but just how do we let her thrive? And it's been such a joy to see what she's able to do and how she's impacting others. And so that change in perspective, if you can encourage your kids to see challenges in life through that lens, I think that fear is lessened.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories you can share? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not a good idea and we'll edit it out, where you've had worked with families where siblings are like, I don't want anything to do with this.
Yeah, absolutely. We have too many of those, okay. Honestly. And I guess I'm going to go back to that same thing I said, unfortunately, but it's those instances where the families want nothing to do with the future plan. They want nothing to do with being that future guardian. If something were to happen, they weren't part of the conversations. They felt left out continuously. They didn't feel like they had a voice. They felt like things were expected of them versus them being part of the brainstorming and the challenge and the solutions over and over again. So again, just get your kids involved as soon as possible. Even if it's just a curious question of, hey, what do you think about this? They will feel like their voice is heard.
Hmm. That's a really great point. Yeah. To not have it be a blindside thing when you're older, you've got your own family, then all of a sudden to, you know, if you weren't thinking that way, to all of a sudden have it thrust upon you could be, you're probably not going to get the more positive answer than you want, you know, as a family unit. From your experience, Phil, in special needs planning, what are the potential positives and negatives associated with supported decision making?
Yeah, that's become quite the topic of the guardianship versus supported decision making, and which one is the right answer. And it's tough, right? Because not one family is the same, and every state is completely different. So there's not one blanket, one size fits all approach, just like there isn't for planning. But as a family unit, as you're trying to figure out what do we do, how do we best support our loved one from the decisions that they could make that could be a detriment to them, I always have them go back and start with, what does that abundant future for your child look like? What are those abilities that you see in them that you want to continue to nurture that will allow them to become the best version of themselves? And it might seem strange to start there when we're talking about guardianship versus supported decision-making, but if we can start there, our sights get set on this future that we could create. Then you can start looking at, what are the potential challenges and roadblocks that could prevent that? And oftentimes it becomes, they could make a decision that would derail what that potential and opportunity could be. And so the guardianship, a lot of times families will be felt like they are being pushed in that direction without another option. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, a lot of families feel like there's a camp saying, no, you cannot strip rights away. You have to go through the supported decision making. And that's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll start with how I look at guardianship, because I think there's pros and cons to both. How I view guardianship and how I explain it to families is, it's almost like the idea of a guardian angel, that idea that there is a higher power that's watching over, right? And this idea of a guardian angel isn't that something or somebody is making decisions for you every single step of the way. The guardian angel steps in when needed to protect you, right? And so I think the same is true for guardianship. My parents have guardianship of Sarah, and it's never been something that has limited Sarah's ability to live a happy and fulfilling and purposeful life. There's been a few instances where my parents have had to step in to change a behavior or change something, but most of the time Sarah makes her own decisions and she doesn't feel like she's limited in that. So that's how I look at guardianship. But as far as the supported decision-making, you just really have to look at what's needed. If your child is able to make the financial and legal decisions on their own, or if they're able to drive, or if they're able to sign contracts for work and different things that they're doing, you know, guardianship might be too overbearing. So those are some of the ways I look at guardianship versus supported decision-making.
I feel like guardianship or the idea of supportive decision making feels newer on the scene. Like I'm just hearing about it in the last few years. It wasn't something that was talked about 15 years ago when Mason was born. I knew about guardianship, but supportive decision making wasn't something. Does that feel true for you in your industry too, that it's newer on the scene?
Yeah, it is newer. And from a states-based perspective, the laws around supportive decision making are still very unclear. Every state makes their own laws and regulations about what type of support there is with supportive decision making. So every family has to look into what their state's program looks like. But it's hard. You can adopt. I love the idea of supportive decision making because that's what we should be encouraging our loved ones to think, how they should think, right? We should be allowing them to make their own decisions, helping them reason what's best versus what's not so great, and following them along the way. And that guardianship power comes in place if something major happens that you need to step in and reverse. So, and that's how my parents look at guardianship. My sister votes. They don't tell her who to vote for. They help her in the election process saying, here's the people that you are going to be voting for. Here are some things that they stand for. You make the decision. In doctor's appointments, my mom is in that appointment, but she's allowing my sister to make certain decisions for herself. And mom is just there to make sure that she's protected, right? So I love the idea of supported decision-making. What I struggle with is how much power do parents or siblings, if they're playing that guardian, how much power do we have to step in and be that guardian angel, reverse a decision that was made?
And I'm sure you see in the work you do, it's a very personal decision, right? And that's part of what you do is you walk people through seeing all the different aspects of that and what's going to work best for me is not what's going to work best for Mercedes and for you. And we got to, it's also personalized, which it needs to be, which is what got you to do what you do, right? Like to get outside of that cookie cutter, this is how you plan for your loved one with an intellectual disability into this like honoring.
Because it really goes back to every single planning decision has to be focused on that fulfillment, purpose, and impact. What does a life of that look like for our loved ones? And are the decisions that we're making, whether it's buying life insurance or opening up a special needs trust or how we're doing all these things, or if it's looking at guardianship versus supported decision making, how are these two decisions allowing for that impact and that success for our loved one?
That's good. I have a question, Philip, about you can tell us about your personal experience or speak from working. When you have families with multiple siblings or multiple caretaker options looking into the future, what are some tips for families listening like to approach that? Like, for example, I have two sisters who are close by. And then like if something were to happen now to our kids, we've talked through this and our plans had to change because things have changed in their families. But then we also have like these good friends that would take our kids if needed, you know, like it just starts to change. But who gets the kids if a lot of people want them?
So me and my sister will fight over Sarah when that day happens. We often joke about that as a family.
That's so cute.
But that is important. How do we map out and name that future care and support team is a big conversation when it comes to planning, making sure that's done in a legally binding way so that the courts can look and say, okay, this were your parents' wishes and now you are named as guardian or trustee. But there's so many different roles. I'll just use my family for example. That's so many different roles that would make up Sarah's future care and support team. Number one, there's the guardian that we're talking about. Whether we get full guardianship as for me, for her, it's still up in the air, but there would be somebody who is there to guide her and to make sure she's supported and loved and included, mm-hmm. right? So that guardian, you got to have a primary person in that event. We also have to have a backup because we never know what life is going to be. So when you have too many people, and that's a problem, right? It's a good problem to have, but it's a problem in itself who want to play a role. We just got to figure out who plays the best role for the types of jobs that we need. Because we need somebody who's good with money. We need a backup person who's good with money. We need a person who is good with Sarah. We need a backup person that's good with Sarah for my family. And so there's four people right there that we've got to name on that future care and support team who would play a role. And one thing I always share with families is we've got to separate powers. What I mean by that is the person that's controlling Sarah should not be the person that's controlling the money. Because there's got to be a separation of powers. And the same is true for having multiple people who want to play guardian. A lot of families will come to me and say, well, I want to name both of my kids as co-guardians. And they share that out of love and out of knowing that their children want to be involved. But what happens if there's a disagreement, right? Who makes the decision? Right. Who's the tiebreaker? And so having one person make primary decisions, in my opinion, is always best.
I love that. Are there any resources you'd recommend families consider when beginning this process? That, and as well as any other like support for siblings resources you may know about.
From a sibling's perspective, the National Down Syndrome Society is starting a wonderful sibling group. And I've been involved with them for a little bit. And the team that's building this group is amazing. And they have a huge vision of what this is going to look like. And it's really a group for siblings to come and say, you know, we had a different experience growing up, but here's how our loved one has impacted us. So it's coming from the perspective of how do we empower ourselves to help our loved ones make the best decisions so that we can be informed about what future opportunities there might be. Mm-hmm. And when the day comes that we are guardians at some point, we have all the resources that we need to be able to help make those decisions as easy as possible. So that's the NDSS is a wonderful resource for siblings. For guardianship and thinking through pros and cons versus guardianship versus supported decision making, I would tell families to talk with other families who have been in their shoes and not ask what should we do, but ask specific questions on their process. What was the process like for you? What went well? What did you find challenging? What do you wish you could have done differently? Why did you make certain decisions that you did? So ask those deeper questions because, again, there's no one size fits all. Don't talk to another family for guidance, but talk to a family for wisdom about what went well and what they wish they would have done differently.
That's good advice. I have a question I'm wondering, maybe this will be one of our last questions, and it's a little more personal, so you don't have to answer it. But again, going back to our listeners, then that idea of like being so nervous for their sibling and you're an adult. And then if you could talk to us through your process of like, you're brought into it early. You said like 11, 12 years old in the conversation and thinking about the fact that Sarah, you're going to have a relationship with Sarah that's going to be different and more impactful, right? Than with your other sister. And more involved, I could say. And then you get married and how does that play into it? And then you have a baby. And how does that conversation change? And then you're having another baby. And I'm assuming, making an assumption, that the conversation changes with each big life change for you. Can you talk to me and Mercedes and our listeners a little bit about that process for you?
Yeah. The plan and the conversation always changes. I mentioned earlier, it's not like we sit down once a year and say, okay, let's go over Sarah's plan. It's continually talking through this. How does every single member of the family in our life circumstances and things going on with us, how does that impact what Sarah's future plan is? And it certainly does. When I got married, before we got married, I sat down with Chelsea and said, this is the reality of what life looks like. If something were to happen to my parents, we would play this role. And I need you to understand that before we get into too far down the road, right? So having those conversations as early as possible is very important. And, you know, when it comes to all of life's changes. That's why the plan has to adapt and adjust along the way. And the one thing that I can say with that is we've got to make it as easy as possible for siblings to, quote unquote, pick up the pieces if something were to happen. So it's great mm-hmm. that we have the conversations, right? That's a must. But if there's no plan to back up those conversations, there's a lot that's out of our control. And so our family's planning conversations have to be aligned with what the actual financial and estate plans look like and the guardianship decisions. And the communication process around that has to be solid. Because if something happened to my parents, I know exactly what the plan is. I know how much money would be in Sarah's special needs trust. I know which courthouse to go to for me to apply for guardianship. I know where her rep payee account is. I know all about the government benefits. So there's all these moving pieces that if we didn't have a plan and communication around, it would just be a mess if something happened to my parents.
Yeah.
So for families, that is such a relief and a weight off their shoulders. Once they have those conversations and the plans that go with them, they no longer have to worry about what would happen to my child. Would mm-hmm. people right. understand what to do? And that's peace of mind for most families.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that's big true. Time.
Well, is there anything else, Phil, that you would like to share to close this out?
I think whether we're talking about guardianship, whether we're talking about support decision-making, future jobs, whether we're talking about financial planning, legal planning, whatever the conversations are that relate to our loved ones, we've got to remember to focus on the abundance that they can provide to the world, right? Mm-hmm. If we start the planning conversations there, mm-hmm. we remove the fear from the conversation. Now we can focus on what a great life mm-hmm. looks like. And that's a much easier conversation than what are the challenges? What are the roadblocks? What happens if right. parents die? All of these things that nobody wants to think about. If we can set our sights on that abundance, it makes the planning conversations fun, and we will find mm-hmm. solutions to the what ifs along the way, but that shouldn't be our focus. And so I know the conversation today was focused on the guardianship and support decision-making and how siblings need to be involved in that. But if the siblings are listening to this, just know that you need to be part of the process. And if you haven't been yet, insert mm-hmm. yourself in that, because I think your parents probably want you to be, but a lot of parents are fearful to involve you too soon. And same is true for parents. Just get them involved as soon as possible, because nothing but good can come from it. And allow your siblings to have a voice, to have say, to mm-hmm. be curious mm-hmm. about what abundance looks like, because a different perspective is not always bad. It's usually good.
Yeah. Right. So good.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. helpful, Philip. I would say to the listeners, so the Avis family has worked with Philip and his team and have a trust in place. And like, as you were saying, having that plan, you started listing, right? Like you know where to go to court and you know where the finances and all of that. And prior to working with you, honestly, all of that, I would hang up and feel so overwhelmed and stressed, because it's so overwhelming. Like, where do you go? And listeners, this is where you go. Like, this is the plan. Shameless plug here. you go to Enable S&P, and we've done it, and I can wake up every day with that relief, honestly, because it also, what I love that you guys do, Philip, and you're the only people we've worked with. I've never worked with, I don't have anything to compare it to, but we have had, that's the revisiting of the plan. Like, we had a plan when we met with you 5 years ago, whatever it was. And so much has changed in our personal lives that we've had to adjust the plan significantly so, and put new people in charge of things and shift things around and do all of that. But also what I love is I'm not great at executing things like that, but we haven't even had to. You come to us, like, tap on the shoulder. Hey, have you thought about this? Like, we haven't. Thank you. Let's do that. Like, let's change it all up. And then you guys do. And it's just been, anytime we have, like, Josh and I are talking about a big financial thing right now, and it is that shift in perspective of the abundant life for Mason and August and Truly, right? Like, for all three of our kids, like, what does this abundance look like? And does this financial decision fit into that? And if it does, hey, team, can you help us with all the paperwork and all the little extra things that go along with it? So listener, like, contact Enable S&P today, because it's just like, I just can't explain enough what a relief it is. And I'm so grateful for that. So thank you, Philip.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
It goes back to the early conversations with my family and seeing how planning wasn't easy and it was complicated. And I looked at that even from a young age, not knowing the complexity of what it actually meant, but thinking planning shouldn't be this difficult. And it's something that I've continued 15 years into my career, trying to figure out how to make it easier for families to get this done.
Yeah. And it, I honestly can cry thinking about life, my kids' life without me. I think it's just because I'm controlling. Like I don't, it just is very overwhelming emotionally to me when we're talking these realities through. And especially with our, my kids with Down syndrome, that it's, it is like when they're 30, it doesn't, they're just not out of my hands. You know, like it's, they need me and I can work through that with a therapist, but the way that you frame it, and I've said this already, but I just can't feel like to emphasize it of when you're making those plans from the, there's a real easy way to lean into doing it from fear, being terrified, right? Like, okay, we have to make a plan and I'm so terrified of what that will be and how this is going to play out when I'm not there. But how you guys are like, let's start from abundance. How do we make a plan based on your child's abundant future? And even in that, like their abundant future means when I'm gone, this is who is stepping in. Like not out of, oh shoot, I'm afraid of what me being gone, but no, this is going to be in a, their abundant life will continue with this idea. So that shift in perspective and framing is really, it's really helpful. So thanks for doing that.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Very good. And listeners, if you are interested in a little, we've had a conversation about guardianship, conservatorship, and supportive decision making with a parent and her son with Down syndrome. And that is episode 214. You can listen to that, get some different perspectives. But Philip Clark, thank you so much for being here. Tell our listeners how they can find you.
Best way is our website, enablespecialneedsplanning.com, or you can shorten it up, enablesnp.com. We also have a Facebook group that's a free online community where we provide tips and have trainings, and our team is involved in this to answer questions, just to help provide value to families. Maybe you're not ready to jump in and start planning yet, but you just need a few different questions answered. We offer a free group to help with a lot of this. So I'll send you over the in the show notes. You can put a link to that Facebook group.
That's great.
Amazing.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a break and be right back.
At 23 weeks of pregnancy, my third baby received a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome. I spent his early years struggling to explain his value in a world that continually questioned his worth. I wanted to say that he was uniquely valuable, even blessed. That overused, often trite hashtag of a religious word no one ever really knows how to define. On April 9th, I'll release a book about my story of raising Ace, who lives with Down syndrome and autism, and who doesn't speak. The book is an exploration of an ancient poem deeply important to my faith, a poem that asks the question of what it means to be blessed, what it means to be whole. Because in the dream of God, in the really real, blessing is rarely what we think it is. Pre-order Blessed Are the Rest of Us, How Limits and Longing Make Us Whole, anywhere books are sold. To get 40% off, follow the link in our show notes to Baker Bookhouse and use the code SLOWAY.
Okay, well, we have to wrap it up now. Friends, head over to theluckyfew.co and use code PODCAST to get 10% off your narrative shifting gear. And did you know we send out a weekly newsletter? We do every week. So please sign up and get early access to events and more, such as our merch and lots of other goodies. Head over to heatheravis.com to sign up for that.
And thank you again to our guest, Philip, for being on the show. Thank you to Josh Avis for editing this episode and Ashley Fracalossi for producing it. And if you like this episode, share it with family and friends. There's definitely a mom or a dad or a sibling that you know needs to hear this. So share that with them, and then don't forget to subscribe.
And what else? Please check us out at theluckyfewpodcast.com for the show notes. Lots of good stuff will be added there, so make sure to check that out. Everything that we talked about today, and be sure to follow us on social media at The Lucky Few Pod.
And listener, you are crushing it. We are here for you. We love you. We're cheering you on, and we can't wait to be together for another episode next week. Until then, see ya.
Bye.